Good morning, everyone. Thanks for coming. This is one of our leadership enhancements. We've been doing these for about, I think, a year and a half now. We try to present some sort of topic or something to discuss. I guess the counseling department that we think is important, something that we think you guys would, I guess, benefit from. So as we're doing this, maybe it's probably important to tell you a little bit about myself. My name is Brian Jones. I've been a counselor here for about 6 years. I've been doing also pastoral coaching, or I guess as the adults call it, I would be a junior sphere leader. I've been doing that for a little over 6 years, about 7 years now. When I first started doing counseling, one of the things that I noticed very quickly, actually I knew this all along because all my friends told me this, is that I'm not very emotionally attuned. Me and my wife have a kind of ongoing joke. When we got married, we realized we were almost direct opposites. If emotions were crayons, she'd be like the 120 box, right? The one with the sharpener on the back, very attuned to what it is that she feels. And I'm probably more like the cheap knockoff doll off-brand that you get when you go to Applebee's, right? I can tell you when I'm mad. I could tell you when I'm confused sometimes. But when we first got married, and you know, as a lot of my friends can attest before that, I just had a hard time really telling you what it was that I was feeling or experiencing. Great thing is that I guess to be a good counselor, hopefully, you don't need to necessarily be totally in tune with your own feelings. Sometimes it's a matter of, being able to speak truthfully into people's lives. But today what we're going to be talking about is actually how to do that better, how to speak into people's lives, how to utilize, how to understand, how to move forward with people's feelings. So this is going to be very cursory. It's an overview. We have to say that up front because there's a lot of things that we're going to cover. There's going to be a lot of topics that I'm going to give you references for, things that may be past topics that we've gone over. I'll probably send you to other teachings. But the point is that this is going to be simple enough, hopefully, that you guys learn something, but complex enough that you guys got to go do some research on your own. We're going to try to leave about an hour for questions, comments, and a couple of exercises that we may try to do to maybe further develop some of these thoughts. But overall, we're going to discuss how to handle emotions in relationships, particularly the negative ones. I don't think many people really have a lot of problems feeling joyful in their relationships, so we're going to ignore those for today. Also, how is it that we as leaders teach people to gain emotional maturity in their life? Now, one thing I'm going to warn you of right now, right, is that for the sake of time, I do not have enough time if we're trying to do this lecture to build a whole biblical anthropology, a study of what man is and what it is that emotions are. As you're taking notes, as you guys are, going through this, if you think at any point or if you think there's something going on here that doesn't align with Scripture, please, by all means, write it down, ask afterwards. We want to be able to illustrate that a lot of these principles are biblical in nature. If you have something, please feel free when we're done to ask about it. So, typically, one last thing. So for the future, once again, as you guys are writing notes and stuff like that, if there are things in this that you're confused by, that you want further explanation on, that you think that we haven't explained or I haven't explained enough, please write it down. We want input. The counseling department right now, we are trying to figure out ways that we can make sure we get materials, stuff into your guys' hands as you are working with people, doing discipleship. We want to be a part of this process with you guys. And so this is going to include feedback for other enhancements, but it also kind of gives us an understanding of where you guys are, which is, I think, what we're trying to do as a community. So feelings, right? We have this fleshly spectrum that we usually find ourselves on, right? When it comes to emotions, we find ourselves either exalting them, praising them, loving them, being just enthralled by them, or, you know, we usually find ourselves on the opposite side of the spectrum, suppressing them, trying to push them away or get rid of them. So when we exalt emotions, right, we really are allowing them to guide our decisions. If I feel bad, what I want to do is I want to feel better. And so the way that I do that is try to go and pursue something that I think will meet that end. So really what I'm doing is I'm allowing my feelings to dictate to me what it is that I should do. They are the thing that guide a lot of our decisions. And I think the reason it's easy to do this is probably all of our disciples and of us at one point have said is that emotions, they're tangible. They're really present. They're hard to ignore most of the time. And so, I think it becomes very easy to live in such a way that we're constantly either moving from one to the next or trying to appease, trying to please ourselves in some sort of various way. And so, I imagine all of us as we're sitting here can kind of think of this kind of person, someone who spends most of their life in this area. And, this doesn't have to be just in the pleasurable way either, right? I'm sure we know a lot of people who it seems like they really love to be depressed. They're constantly finding ways to be disappointed or sad, right? We can do that. And I think if we're being all really honest, I think we've all been this type of person at some time or another. When haven't there been times where this is the case, right? I can think about times in my childhood when my aunt died or when my best friend died. There were times where I wanted to sit just in the sadness, in the melancholy state. I remember once people were asking me questions, I remember the thing that I ended up saying was, I want to be sad. I want to remain in this because what it says to me, it's significant because it says that I actually care. Right? I want to wallow in these emotions. And so, I think that's one extreme. Obviously, this is a spectrum, and so most of the time we should find ourselves someplace in the middle. Sometimes we're going to find ourselves on these extremes, and at times that's going to be okay. But if we find ourselves hanging out in one of these extremes, that's where things usually get pretty bad. So on the other end, we try to suppress emotion, try to get rid of it, try to push it away, particularly the bad ones, right? I don't want to have to experience this. I don't want to have to acknowledge this is here. Rather than maybe me explaining it, maybe me take a second, ask you guys, what are ways that we do this? What do you guys think?
One thing I do is, find something complicated to just keep your mind focused without having to think about it.
Yeah, so find some really busying task that I can mull over, something that's really complex so that I don't have to really acknowledge that maybe there's something that I'm feeling. Yeah, I think we're pretty good at that. Bev?
We can get focused on other people's behaviors and things they've done to ignore our own feelings. So we stay focused on what we think caused our feelings rather than focus on our feelings.
Yeah, so we become hyper-attuned to what other people are doing. Maybe we become hyper-attuned to the way that they made us feel, but we really focus on what their actions are. I know I can do this in arguments a lot. Probably carries over my wife. I apologize, Hope. Probably comes over as, I'm ready just or always kind of in counseling mode, and I'm ready to just constantly figure out what's going on. And so a lot of times I fail to look and see what's going on my side. A lot of times it's easier. Yep.
No, I will go to the Bible and be like, oh, look, here's this scripture that says this is how I can be happy. And if I just put this into practice, then these negative emotions will go away instead of actually processing those.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a really important one, right? As we do Christian ministry, as we try to lead people, one of the things that we begin to do a lot of times is we can just kind of blanket scripture over top of issues, right? Maybe you've heard the proverb, putting a Band-Aid over a bullet wound. Sometimes people's problem isn't just the problem that's being presented. And so a lot of times you're right, I can just go to scripture and I can say, man, I should just feel better about this because this is true, but it doesn't actually address the real feeling that I'm feeling. We'll probably get a little more into that in a minute. Yes?
I think, I can make this assumption, we can all make this assumption that feelings are bad, and so in an attempt to look spiritual, we don't want to address them or look at them.
Yeah, I think that that's a pretty common, and I will say even satanic sentiment. So a lot of that probably came out of rationalism, right? That we are just automatons, that we can predict our behavior. Logic is the supreme thing. What it really does is it serves to divorce what humanity actually is. The Bible says that people are not just thinking beings, we are also feeling beings. God is that way too, right? God painfully goes out of his way to address and show us that he has some sort of feeling, or at least he makes it known that that's important. Jesus, as Bev mentioned, you'd be remiss to find a place where Jesus does something pretty spectacular or amazing and he doesn't have some sort of feeling that's accompanied with it. So we get in this mode where we think that feelings are not worth it. Because they're subjective, we can't utilize them, we can't use them, we need to ignore them, and as I think we'll see today, I think that's dead wrong.
I think you have your typical numbing agents. You know, you got drugs or alcohol or, you know, video games, illicit things. But I think also, you know, as we mature, and I've seen this in my own life in the Christian walk, I think especially for men, as you get into a career, it's easy to just numb throughout, you know, 8 to 10 hours of your day by kind of immersing yourself. You know, I work in a construction type of field, so it's like logic and results are the only thing that matters in what I do. And so, you know, 40 to 50 hours a week, that's the way that my mind is operating. And so it kind of numbs to the emotion of, you know, the other, whatever, 120 hours a week.
Yeah, so we find various ways to numb our minds so that we don't have to experience that stuff. Success, drugs, alcohol, you name it. And the other thing that, surprisingly enough, is kind of fits into the logic over on the other side is some people, what they even do is they will wash themselves in so many emotions that they don't know which one's the most important one, right? I don't have to feel any of one particularly because I can feel all of them, right? You can numb yourself out that way. Pretty incredible. Last one.
A good friend of mine, and I have talked about this a little bit, how he just like often does not want to feel the sad emotions, and so he will often cut them with laughter, with jokes. So it's like, you know, something bad happens, and he's just very quick to start joking around so that he doesn't have to stay in that state.
Yeah. Man, I can't tell you the number of times that I've had someone come into my office, and every time we start to press in upon something that might be sad or disturbing, joke, sarcasm, right? Hey, do you notice you're doing that? You see that, like, you're covering up what might be there with sadness, with sarcasm? You know, that it's not really helping your case, is it? So yeah, I think all of these are ways, and I'm sure if we sat here, we could come up with hundreds of more. With the hours that we put into working with people and trying to lead people, there are plenty. And I think, as Romans says, that we are creatively sinful, right? We are always coming up with new kinds of evils, new ways in which we can distort how things actually are and kind of push out what God may be wanting to do. So for the sake of consistency, what I want to do is I want to give us an example. Now, at the end, once again, if you guys want more examples, this one's going to happen to be in a marriage relationship, but you'll see that a lot of these principles don't have to just be in marriage. They can be in friendship. They can be between us and God. A lot of these things that we're going to talk about would work with them as individuals. We wouldn't even necessarily need the other person there, but I think the dynamic will be important to see as we play it out. So Bob and Wanda are a fictitious couple. Don't try to figure out who they are. I know you guys... We're all ZNS people. We try to do this often. But don't try to figure it out. This is going to be an amalgamation of many people, right? This could be, 20 different people, 20 different couples that have come into my office. But the point is the story is pretty similar. I think you'll find that there are a lot of commonalities with people and hopefully situations that you found yourself in. So, you know, Bob and Wanda come in. Actually, I've already seen Bob before. I know a little bit about him. He's a pretty stoic guy, but he comes in today extra stoic, right? Kind of just see, sits on the couch at a distance from his wife. His wife sits in a chair over on the other side of the room. Already trouble stirring, you can tell. And so he sits down on the couch, is starting to tense up, a little bit closed off. His wife just immediately begins talking. I haven't even asked her how she's doing, and she's already telling me, right? I'm mad, right? My husband has brought me here. He only told me last night that this is what we were coming to do. Like, I know he's told me before that we might come here, but like, I feel totally unprepared, and I feel overwhelmed. You know, and then now I'm scared because I know that you already have a relationship with Bob, and then that's probably going to mean that you're biased, and then I'm worried about that, and right? But I'm also excited because I know that we need help. We need it. And just, you know what I mean? Already within, you know, 2 seconds, all the emotions you can get, right? They're just all there. She's just wallowing in all of them. And you can just see you know, as this is going on, I'm watching Bob, you know, as all of these words are starting to come out of her mouth, like slowly you just see him kind of clenching up, tensing up, hands, fists, closing off, right? Feelings. They're there. We'll come back to them. So we're going to give maybe a spiritual perspective. This is obviously not the only perspective, but I think that this one is particularly helpful. This is something that I've found very useful in the work that I do. One of the things that we have to keep in mind with feelings is that feelings, although they are not God, they are God-given. Right? They are not something that is meant to be praised or exalted. That is not their position. We are not meant to serve them like we would God. But at the same time, they are something that God has given us to experience, to process, and dare I even say enjoy. Sometimes even the negative ones, yes. God's placed them there for a reason. And to deny that, I think, once again, is going to cause us all sorts of trouble. So, the other thing that I like to keep in mind is that while feelings don't tell us what is true, like ultimately, in the ultimate sense, right, feelings are not a good indicator of what God says is true about reality. That's not their purpose. But what feelings are really good at doing is they tell us what we as individuals believe is true. Right? Let me say it again, right? They don't tell us what is ultimately true. They don't tell us what God says is true. I think God has given us other faculties and resources for that. But what they do really well is they tell us what we believe is true. And we'll come back to this a number of times, I think, throughout this talk. Feelings like reason are fallen, right? We have to keep that in perspective. We know that feelings have the tendency to not be aligned with what God says is true. The great thing is that in heaven, that will no longer be the case. When we feel things in heaven, they will be in line totally with God. Right? Same thing with our reason. Reason itself, thinking through logic, it can be skewed. One of the good examples that I give people that come into my office, right, is that in logic we have, or in reason we have, these examples where something can be internally consistent but externally false, right? So you can set up a system where a dog equals a bird equals a cat, therefore a dog equals a cat or a bird, whichever order I said. But the point is they all equal each other. But then when you actually extrapolate that to reality itself, well, we all know that dogs don't equal birds, and dogs don't equal cats, and cats likewise. That kind of system in and of itself in our brain causes what we call cognitive dissonance. We can believe all sorts of things that are simultaneously true when they're not, right? Our brains aren't always meant to determine what is and isn't true, right? That's why we have God so powerfully speaking into our minds and our feelings through the Word. So we have to keep in mind that feelings are fallen. We don't want to treat them like God, but like we said, they are God-given. So let me maybe ask one more question, right? What would the result, or what are some of the results you guys have seen from eliminating emotions altogether or being overly dependent upon them? Yep, over here.
From my own experience with this, it's just like the emotions are going to come out one way or the other. And a lot of times it's just going to be super overwhelming, and then you're kind of worse off than when you started. Like, you know, I tend to suppress a lot of emotions and feelings. And so, like, when they, you know, that's my form of trying to eliminate them. But then, like, as that builds up, I you know, have like bitterness, resentment towards people or situations, and then it just comes out in just heaping, sobbing mess. And it's not good to like just have these regular cycles of just one day or a week just being really torn up about stuff or whatever.
Yeah, so you know, when we push it down, it has to come out some other way. Mm-hmm. We cannot destroy emotion. We can't pretend that it's not there and have it have no consequence. It doesn't work, right? It's kind of like the dust brushed under the rug. It's still there. It doesn't look like it's there, or at least in the moment it doesn't look like it's there, but eventually, you know, you start to get a raised rug. And so in the same thing with us, right? We can't just dismiss or get rid of. We don't have that kind of power. So yeah, it has to come out some sort of way, you're right. And I think it comes out in all sorts of various ways. Yeah.
I think on a similar, I guess, thought, I found that when I try to suppress them, it's like, it almost makes them more powerful sometimes because I'm less aware of them. I'm not actually talking about them, I'm not as aware of them. And so the way they influence me is also less aware in my mind. Like I'm not even aware of how they're influencing me, which can kind of make them more dangerous in some ways, where it's like, this is going to come out and I'm not even going to realize that it's related to that emotion that I was feeling, you know?
I'm going to take a minute on that point. So one of the things that I run into a lot, you know, and this is, I think, I don't think that this is a male-female thing, but I think the way that our culture is constructed is that oftentimes it becomes one because, you know, men are taught not to be in tune with their feelings. One of the things that I think I hear men say a lot is they'll sit and say that, you know, feelings make me weak, right? But I think the thing that I painstakingly try to make aware to people is that actually not acknowledging your emotions actually makes you more weak because they actually have control over you. I would say, you know, weakness is being controlled by something, right? And that's the thing that they're really trying to say, but the honest truth is then you're right, it comes out in this unexpected way over here that they're not really aware of, and so really they're not in control of themselves anymore. That's true weakness, is when we allow it. We actually give sometimes emotions that power to have control over us, to dictate to us. You actually swing over to the other side when you actually don't look at them, assess them, manage them, bring them to the word, actually try to experience them as they're meant to be experienced. So yeah, that's really true. Yeah, over here.
I think in either case, you would essentially be way less effective to serve and love other people. So I think if you're like on the one hand trying to ignore your emotions and push them down and like kind of just pretend that they don't exist, if someone were to like come to you and try to be open about their emotions, like I feel like it would not be your top priority to want to like talk through those emotions with them, because if you're trying to avoid your own, it's going to be really hard to like engage in that with them. So I think they'd be left feeling like you're very much logically trying to fix the problem versus like also helping them to address the emotions. And I think on the other side, if you were being overly dependent on your emotions, you're so focused on your own emotions and what's going on with you that if someone were to be like, hey, I'm having this issue, you might start to emotionally appeal to them rather than helping them with like what's actually true and helping them to take like God's truth as a stance instead of like trying to validate all their emotions.
Yeah. You know, as leaders, as disciple makers, as friends, as husbands, as wives, you know, God's call, one of his main calls is the responsibility he gives us is to make people mature into the fullness of Christ. Right? If we ignore or we wallow in, we get a picture other than that which Christ presented. Right? Christ was able to do both. I mean, there are times where you see that Christ, you know, felt his feelings fully. He wasn't afraid to express what it is that he was experiencing. But on the flip side, you probably also noticed moments where he controlled himself, where he didn't allow his emotions to be the thing that, that dictated to him what it is that he was supposed to do or not do. You know, you look when he's out in the wilderness, 40 days, 40 nights, right? He's hungry, which is an emotion. It's a very weak one, but it's an emotion nonetheless. But then you see that he's there and he's weak. He expresses that at various points. The disciples were very keenly aware, you know, what is it in John 4, the woman at the well, it says that Jesus was tired. The disciples saw fit to make sure that that was expressed, right? He was tired, he was worn down, but what did he do anyway? He served, right? So even though there is emotion there, we see that there's this kind of godly balance going on, and if we try to do one of those two things, we are not pushing people to be like Christ, and so that's really important. Yeah.
Yeah, you kind of just touched on this, but if you're overly emotional, I think that, well, for me, if I'm kind of allowing myself to become dependent on emotions, then I allow my actions to become dependent on those emotions. And so if I'm not feeling great about a disciple or some ministry situation, then I won't be stoked to do that. And, you know, sometimes, like, just won't do it, you know, because I'm not feeling it, you know. Whereas if I'm feeling awesome, then I might even try to do too much, where it's like I'm talking too much or just like, you know, almost too excited, kind of getting in there when I shouldn't be. So I think we can kind of allow ourselves to be sort of controlled in that way, with like our action to be controlled by emotion.
Yeah, how many times have you had a disciple that sits there and says to you, well, I don't feel like doing it, so that would be legalism if I do it? Is that the definition of legalism? Like what you feel or don't feel like doing? I don't think so, right? I think there are plenty of places that the words would sit and say, hey, we need to take out on a step of faith that this is going to happen, and some sort of feeling might follow. It would be legalism if you were forced to do this, if you had the understanding that God wasn't going to love you if you didn't do this, that God was withholding from you if you didn't do this, but like, that's not what it says. That's not legalism. Legalism isn't whether you feel or not feel. That's not what this is about. Yeah, over here.
I was just thinking, I sway on the side of eliminating emotions, and I think there came a point where I realized it came down to the desire for control, that I wanted to control every part of my life that included how I felt. And what happened eventually over time was that you could only get so deep with God. I could only get to a certain point with God. And the reality is because we have to be in a point of humility, at a point of brokenness before God where we are not in control. And so I think that desire to be in control often put me in a position where it was hard to relate with God because I wanted control so bad, and our relationship with God is not based on that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. What we tend to do is we tend to mistake what ought to be with what, or what is with what ought to be. So a lot of times I think to myself, I have to make myself be this image bearer of God. I have to be in control. I have to make myself look like Christ. And what that does is that's essentially a denial of the gospel, which says that I'm not in control. I don't know what's going on. While I may gain some semblance of understanding of who God is, I still am at the mercy and whims of being in a world that's sinful and fallen. And so if things are going to change, if I'm going to change, if my thoughts, my attitudes, my behaviors, any of those things, even my feelings are going to change, I have to recognize that God has to be an integral piece of this. And so it's this nice little tidy area that we actually, by trying to do something good, maybe even, we actually keep God out of. And it's going to slow down our growth with him, our relationship with him. Let's do these last two. Yeah, go for it, sorry.
Okay. I think what I noticed a lot is when I'm like eliminating emotions, it really leads me to view God as like the demanding boss that's like, you just need to suck it up and do these things, because I'm like, oh, like I can't take my stress to God, or I can't take my anger or my sadness to God, so that it just turns into like this work relationship with him instead of like a father-daughter relationship.
Yeah, I'm not allowed to feel this way, or it shouldn't be this way, therefore I got to get rid of it. So it's like a partial acknowledgement, but then it's also large dismissal. Yeah. Last one.
I have a good friend who I would say is overly dependent upon her emotions, and I've seen something happen with her where she'll get a conviction from God. She'll feel pretty excited about it, but then she'll try to get her emotions in line with it before she'll follow through. And she'll end up losing that conviction because she's waiting and she's essentially saying no, just because she agreed, but she wanted to wait until she felt like she wanted to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, oftentimes like we're like, man, they just have to absolutely be in line, and if they're not, then that's not reality. So yeah, you're right, that could cause all sorts of, tension, lack of intimacy between you and God if there constantly has to be this like check and balance there. That's a good point. Okay, for the sake of time, let's move on. So real quick, I'm gonna show this to you guys. This has been a really helpful model that that I've been working through lately. Not going to say a lot about this. If you guys want maybe further instruction at some other point, that'd be great. But so basically, they call this kind of the wheel of experience. We start off in like, pi square number one, which comes from sensation. This is the way that we take in the world around us, our five senses, right? That's the way that we interact with things and gain some sort of experience with the world around us. So I see something, I hear something. That goes into short-term memory. Then you have kind of pi square two, which, you know, as you take that stuff in, it becomes, logged or registered into our long-term memory, right? This is our history. This is what we've been through. This is the way that we've seen the world and that we understand it. And once again, that's not the total reality because there's a lot of things that you've forgotten or chosen not to remember, or maybe there are things that you do remember, but you don't remember them, but that we'll come back to that later. But we all have this. We carry this around with us. This is our story. And when we get into, three, four, and five, this is, I think, a lot of what the Bible calls the heart. It's the combination of what we think, feel, how we assume or have intention with people. So, you know, we get to three, and that's the interpretation. How do I interpret the facts that I have from my past? Right? So if, my dad abused me, that's a fact. What are the interpretations that I take from that fact? Maybe I begin to believe that I am a person of less value, right? I'm someone who needs to be punished. I'm an evil person. Or there's all sorts of things that we can start to assume. Now, we carry a lot of those assumptions around with us. They don't come out. They're not very easy to see. Maybe in other terminology, you guys have heard the term core belief, right? Same sort of thing going on here. The way that we interpret what it is that has gone on to us is some of those things that sit deep. Then a lot of times we have feelings from these things. If I begin to believe that, I'm a horrible person, or that, that I'm worthless, that I don't have value, that I should be ignored, well, I'm going to feel a certain way about that. I'm going to carry that around with me. The way that I feel about that is going to influence the way that I think, which is kind of this step five. The concept is we have a lot of these feelings, thoughts that kind of circle around both in our conscious and sometimes come to our, or in our unconscious mind and sometimes come to our conscious mind. So there's a lot of the stuff that's kind of going on. And then a lot of that will start to dictate how it is that we act. Well, in all of this, the point is God a lot of times is trying to help us figure out kind of those steps three through five. We as Christians are really good, especially here, are really good at that step six. A lot of times we can identify the bad behaviors and then we change them. And surprisingly enough, God is really good. The Bible talks about this in lots of places, that as we change some of the bad things that we do, it actually influences the way that we think and helps us gain more access to that stuff that's below the surface, right? That's really awesome. And I think a lot of us are really good at doing this. But I think what we're talking about today actually gives us even a better resource to get at a lot of this stuff, and this is actually by addressing, trying to figure out how we feel. And that a lot of times unlocks a lot of these, core beliefs way better than, or way quicker than, just changing action in and of itself. If you guys want more information on this, you guys can ask about it afterwards. So, like we said, if feelings don't tell us what is ultimately true, but tell us what we believe is true, what is it they actually identify? Well, they help us identify our beliefs, right? What I believe is true. This is how I feel. I feel this way. I feel that numbing my mind out with mind-altering substances is going to be better for me than choosing the alternative of remaining sober, sober in the spirit, right? Although I know that the Bible says not to do it, and I know that that's a good thing to do, I believe that my alternative is better, right? This is the place where you have this cognitive dissonance, and just changing your action doesn't get at why you believe that that thing is better than what God is actually offering. It identifies wrong goals, right? Okay, so I may believe this thing is good for me, but I may not know the right thing to do to fulfill it. Right? Maybe I want to be free. Maybe I want to not be bored. Maybe I want fulfilling and satisfying relationships. Maybe I want to be intellectually stimulated. But my solution is to get high. Well, that's a bad goal. You know, God can offer you many of those other things by having a relationship with him and others. Bet you'd find it quite exciting. They show us poor interpretations of others' intents, right? Oh man, you are doing this thing and I feel this way because of what you are doing. You make me feel this way. God has done this to me and therefore I should feel this way. Right? We start to judge what other people are doing without actually knowing, and then we start to react based off of that. Old wounds. You know, I can't tell the amount of times that I'm sitting and I'm working with someone who's come in and we're talking about things that have gone on in their life. They start to express how they feel, and all of a sudden they start to remember, they start to, start to piece together that, I don't know, that their dad abusing them actually has way more effect on them than they think it does. They start to remember past wounds that they didn't know were there. Right? This is something that I had done such a good job of suppressing that I had forgot that it even existed. Right, but those feelings, they're kind of like, me and my wife just recently went to Hawaii. We were at Pearl Harbor, and so there's a ship that sits at the bottom of the ocean. There's a memorial over it. And probably once about every 15, 20 seconds, you'll see oil just seep up to the surface. Right, it's an indication that there's a ship that was destroyed there that has thousands, hundreds of thousands of barrels of oil still in its hull. Right, in the same way, these emotions, they start to bubble up, they trickle up, and they start to indicate that there's probably something there more than you're admitting. Feelings can show us physical, biological, clinical conditions. Right, as we start to eliminate all these different areas that maybe people are doing everything right. Right? Maybe everything is going according to plan. Maybe they're finding themselves aligning up to Scripture, and we are actually telling them that we may be doing harm or damage if really what they're experiencing is a biological, clinical condition, and we're trying to treat it with spiritual means. Right? You feel depressed because there's a chemical imbalance in your mind, and I'm trying to sit here and tell you to do these things that God tells you to do, when really, I don't know, you should probably just take meds. Right? You're not feeling sinful and gross because you're doing something wrong. You're feeling that way because we live in a fallen world where our brain chemistry has the tendency to go off balance. Go see someone. This one I really like, and it'll be in combination with this one. Eternal yearnings, or as I like to put it, kind of existential angst. Right? We inherently know the world is not the way it's meant to be. And that should disturb us. Right? I like what Larry Crabb says. He says the Christian life should be lived in the minor key with occasional periods of transition into the major. Right? We live in a world that yearns, as Romans 8 puts it, we live in a world that yearns to be reconciled with God. And if somehow we fail to see that, right, we're going to fail to project, fail to push people towards heaven. We shouldn't be satisfied here, at least not totally, because we're not as we're meant to be. And so a lot of times, people have these yearnings that they don't have an explanation for, and so they need to find a way to solve that. Right? That was my story. I was a Christian. My friend died. I had all sorts of questions. No one around me had answers. I was told just to believe. Went off and did my own thing. But slowly, right, as I started to do that and things were successful, I really did enjoy most of my life. What I began to understand is that no matter what I did, there was this kind of existential thing there where if all of this is just going to nothing, if God doesn't exist, why does it matter? Right? What purpose is there to doing anything? I could be as successful as I want to be. I could be as sad as I want to be. And if the universe grows to a slow heat death and everything dies and decays, no memory or recollection will be left of me or anyone that I know. Why try? Right? And if we don't answer those kinds of questions, people should be sad. Right? But that's the great place where God comes in and he gives hope. Right? God says, I have answers to these kinds of, to these yearnings that you have. I love what Lewis says, right? He says that, you know, people are not mere mortals. They're meant for an eternity beyond this. But the thing that he, you know, that he says there about this, which is really good, he says it both in The Weight of Glory and in, what's his famous book about? No. It's his apologetic book. Mere Christianity. He says it both in Mere Christianity and... A Weight of Glory. He says that, you know, oftentimes, if we experience yearnings beyond that which we see, it's probably an eternal one. So the final one, you know, and I think there are probably way more than this. This is just the list I came up with. The final one is sin. You know, maybe as we get through all of this, you know, there's just this hidden sin. Things that are sitting down below the surface. You know, everything should be going right. You look at their life, you know, maybe their life is going well, their marriage is going well, all on the surface. But, you know, you see and experience these things that have unnecessary tension, right? And oftentimes, you know, you start pressing in on that, and lo and behold, what happens is people confess. They're like, you're right, things aren't as they seem. There is something hidden. There is something that I've been trying to fix my own way or do my own way, some way that I've been trying to remove myself from God. So this is what they're good at. But how do we build awareness to them, right? A lot of us, maybe we don't know how to do this or we're not keen to how to do this. What do we do? Well, we just send them to a counselor, right? No. Right, no. Don't do this. We don't want to, I'm just kidding. No, but we as leaders should be equipped to try to do this. Right, we want to make sure, I want to make sure, I think the counseling department wants to make sure, God wants to make sure that you guys know that you are capable of doing this stuff. Right, there are many, many places in the Bible where it talks about us as Christian workers, not just leaders, but us as individuals in the body of Christ. We should have every confidence that we can counsel people. Right, we don't need to send people to professionals most of the time. God has empowered us with the Holy Spirit to be able to do this stuff, and we should have some sort of confidence to be able to work through this stuff. So what do we need to do? Well, first step. This is the first step that I take with anyone that is realizing that they have a problem here. It's that we need to pray. Right? I don't know what this should look like. I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to have awareness. I don't know how to have discernment, right? I need to become aware, God. Show me, illustrate to me, make it apparent to me how it is that I'm feeling, who it is that I am, what it is that I'm thinking, right? Man, this is so many places in the Bible that it would be pages if we could see that this is how God talks about it, right? The famous one, Psalm 39, right? Search me, O God, know my heart, right? Now, see if there's any wayward way in me. So it's not just behavior, that's not just thought, that's also feeling, right? What is it that's going on inside of me because I don't know? Jeremiah 17, which says the heart is deceitfully wicked, right? Like we talked about earlier, Romans 2, which sits and says that, you know, humans are creators of all kinds of evil, right? We oftentimes don't know what's going on, so God, we need your help. Right? If we're not praying, we're probably not doing it right. So for those of us who maybe find ourselves on the suppressing side, or maybe you're in that kind of attitude or mood right now, or maybe your disciple is, right, what we need to know is what we need to tell ourselves to be aware of is to go soft on ourselves, right? A lot of times we get really mad at ourselves that we don't know how to do this stuff, but the point is that you are learning a totally new set of skills, right? You're building a vocabulary. And so to expect that you're just going to go from not understanding, you know, feelings and emotions to just understanding all of them would be a gross overassessment. You're going to be in a world of different kind of hurt. You're going to be really frustrated, sad, mad about the situation, yourself, God, all these sorts of things. So the point is we need to understand, like any new activity at first, we're going to be bad. But God, because he's gracious, will begin to illustrate, will begin to show us how it is that we can get better. Right, you know, when it came to me and my wife and crayons, right? What's the difference between cyan and turquoise? You know, I didn't even know that those were words for colors, at a certain point, right? Teal, what is that? Right, isn't turquoise just kind of light blue green? That's what it is. No, but you know, you as you see stuff, as you recognize it, as you talk about it, as you discuss it, you will build a vocabulary, you will become enriched. This takes time. Go easy on yourself. God is. Maybe another thing that you can do, if you find yourself on this side of the spectrum, I think many of us have seen that feelings sheet at some point or another, you know, that has like hundreds of words, descriptive words for what feelings are actually like. You know, if you find yourself at a loss, maybe what you should do is sit down, right? Sit down, take 10, 20 minutes to sit there and actually try to figure out how you feel. Circle words which you think describe your condition. You'll find that you feel all sorts of ways that you didn't know that you felt. Right? It even has categories to help you start to figure out maybe these things fall in this kind of category. Well, that's a great place to start. On the flip side, if you're someone who exalts, who loves to wallow in the emotions, you know, the question I think we really need to be asking God is maybe what draws all this together? Right? If I'm expressing a lot of these things all at once, there's usually a couple of things that maybe tie a lot of the things that we're experiencing together that make sense of it. God, would you show me that? So, praying for awareness and discernment. What do we do next? Well, being observant. I'm going to walk through Bob and Wanda a little bit again, right? Being observant. This means paying attention to the way that people are expressing emotion and the way that we are expressing emotion. So, being observant, what does this look like? So, okay, we go back to Bob and Wanda sitting on the couch, being observant. These two are sitting apart from each other. Well, they probably feel distance, don't they? It's pretty apparent, right? She feels all of these things. He feels closed off, right? We can start to make little assumptions. Now, obviously, we don't want to go, wildly speculating in all these areas, but I think we can actually be observant. We can ask questions about this stuff. So what would this look like? As Wanda's going on about what's going on and about what's happening, you know, she starts to rant into, you know, I just don't understand him. She's mad, right? Or maybe she's perturbed, my wife would tell me. It just seems like he's mad at me all the time. Hurt. It just makes me mad. Mad again. How can he not feel anything? Confusion? Mad? he says he doesn't feel anything. That can't be possible. Then he tells me not to feel. He's totally unpredictable. Confusion, madness, right? There's all sorts of emotions that are going on there, right? I can observe these things, maybe make a hypothesis about what's going on, right? But as I'm watching this, Bob sits there and he's just, you know, grinding his teeth even more and clenching his fist even more and trying to be even more posed, right? Probably feeling frustrated. Okay? So, you know, we go to Bob. What's going on? Well, I don't feel anything. You know, I hear what she says and nothing. What? Am I supposed to feel something? I don't feel for her at all. That was a lot of emotion. It's a lot of emotion going on there. Right? I'm noticing his tense body language. We're watching the change in intonation. His voice is changing. You know, the way that he's using his words, right? They're pretty offensive. They're attacking. They seem like they're meant to land blows. Once again, I don't know this stuff. I don't want to assume that I know this stuff, but you have to start somewhere. Right? So what do I do? Hey, you know what, Bob? This is what I'm seeing. I'm noticing these things, do you? Did you notice how, I don't know, your hands are clenched right now? You notice how, although you say you're not feeling anything at the moment, that a lot of your words seem pretty angry? Would you say that that might be the case? Is there anything else you're feeling? Well, yeah, I'm frustrated, I'm exasperated, I'm confused. Ah, so you do feel something, right? You're not an emotionless automaton. You do feel things, right? And once again, being observant, I'm watching Wanda, and she is sitting there, and she's like, got this look on her face like, ah, aha, gotcha. I know you feel things, right? We'll come back to them in a minute. So we can do this with ourselves and others, right? When you feel anxious, right? If I were to ask you guys, when you feel anxious, what is this like? We'll come back to that in a minute too. But it's really incredible when we can start doing this, it develops an honesty between us and God, right? As I can start accurately portraying the way that I'm feeling, an honesty, an intimacy begins to develop, right? This is where I'm at. This is who I am. Even if this is sinful, this is what I've got, and this is what I'm bringing to the table. Maybe another thing to keep in mind, right, is that feelings, like birds, rarely fly solo. Right? Feelings, like birds, rarely fly solo. What does this mean? Well, I don't know. There's this concept of you know, having primary and secondary emotions. A lot of times we're feeling one way, and then we have a secondary emotion. We feel some way about the feeling that we have. So, you know what I mean? Like, you get the typical argument of the two dudes at the house that are sitting there and arguing over sports facts, and one gets bested by the other one. Internally, right, he feels embarrassed. But now that he feels embarrassed because he was bested, he now gets aggressive or angry to compensate for the fact that he was bested, and then he yells the typical F you, storms out, slams the door. All right, I don't want to be your friend or something like that. Right? He has a feeling about the feeling that he has. This is why feelings sometimes can be really confusing, and a lot of times why we try to push them down and don't want to assess them, right? But, you know, we will have feelings off of feelings. And so one of the things that we have to keep in mind as we're working with people is that they may be reacting to a reaction that they're already having. So, you know, how does this work with Bob, right? So he's feeling this. Real quick. If you guys want more information on this, we have this wonderful paper. It's a secular paper by this guy named Dr. John L. Whalen. He has this paper, and it's called The Constructive Use of Emotions. Secular, so you read through it, have a little bit of discernment, but I think it does a really good job at illustrating this point, so we don't have to belabor it too much. Let's go back to Bob, right? So he's stoic, trying to be in control, maybe, of his emotions, right? He's trying to be exact. He's not trying to yell. He's not trying to be aggressive, but he's trying to control or suppress emotion, which is actually a form of denying the emotion is there. He knew it was there, but you know, as he starts to talk about it, you know, I'm frustrated. I'm confused. I don't feel in control. Okay, yeah, I guess if you didn't feel in control, that would explain maybe why you're frustrated. You feel like you don't know what to do here, and we'll explore that more in a second too. But the point is we should be aware that there are oftentimes many emotions going on at once. So another thing that we have to keep in mind is that that we physically experience feelings. I talked about this a minute ago, but let's go into it in detail. When we feel anger, right, or when we feel anxiety, let's choose that one. When you feel anxiety, what does that feel like? Right, think back to a time where you felt anxious. Right, as you start to think about it, you probably feel your chest starting to close in. You probably can feel maybe in your carotid artery that the, you know, blood pressure is rising. You start to feel trapped, closed in. Right, these are all physical sensations that we experience. That's why they are called feelings. Right, they work simultaneously with physical things that are going on. And so if we can actually make people and ourselves aware of this, then we can actually become more aware of what it is that we're feeling. Bob, you know, he's feeling tense. He's on guard. He's feeling exasperated and confused. I'm like, Bob, I can understand feeling that way. That feels draining. That feels tiring. Can you tell me more about what that's like? Well, yeah, I feel confused and I feel this weight on my shoulders. I feel sad. Oh, Bob, can you tell me more about what sadness feels like? Well, if I'm being really honest, my throat's starting to close in. I can feel my eyes welling up. Kind of feel the hairs on the back of my neck sticking up. I feel a weight in my chest. I feel sad. Man, for a guy who can't feel, he's starting to feel a lot. And in this situation, many times, you actually ask people what it is they're feeling, Bob's going to start breaking down. He's going to cry. Right? Bob, you feel this way? This must be incredibly difficult. This seems really hard. I feel sad. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to feel. I don't feel equipped. When I feel like my wife is doing these things, you know, she at times exhibits signs of maybe anxiety or depression. I don't know how to help her. And so I feel really sad. I feel really inept. I don't understand how it is that I can be there for her. Oh, that makes a lot of sense. So, you know, Bob, have you ever said that out loud before? You ever told God that you feel inept, that you feel not up to the task of loving your wife, that you feel this responsibility to love her and be able to be there for her in this manner, but you feel like you can't do it? Have you ever said that to her? Have you ever said that to God? No. I've never said that to anyone. Well, you know, in that moment, what I would urge him to do is, can you do it now? Can you tell God? Can you tell Wanda? This is where I think the next piece comes in, active listening. We actually have already done a seminar on this. You know, the whole concept of active listening is trying not to start to interpret or bring in what it is that you think is true into the situation. It's really trying to understand what it is that person is saying or dialoguing or how it is that they're thinking, right? Listen to Lee Campbell's lecture on that. It was really good. But, you know, in this situation, what you want to do is, hey, Wanda, in this situation, can you repeat back what Bob just said? Right? Can you say what it is that he just said out loud? Well, yeah. Yeah, he says that he feels sad. See, I knew you had feelings. This just makes so much sense. I don't know why you can't do this all the time. Stop. Right? Because as I'm watching, once again, being observant, I'm watching Bob, and what does he start doing? He's back again. Right? Hey, Wanda, do you see what your husband's doing right now? See how he's reacting to what you're doing? You want to know why he's doing that? It's because you're not actually listening. Right? Can you state out loud what it is that he just said to you? Yeah, okay, let me try again, right? He feels scared, and he feels helpless to come along beside me. And yes, if I really think about that, I can understand that that sucks. Right? You can just see kind of Bob melt away. He's like, I feel understood. You know, Bob, why do you think you haven't said this out loud? Well, you know, I've probably thought things like this before, but I've always been afraid that if I actually say this to my wife, what's going to happen, it's going to make her situation worse. Right? I believe that if I actually am honest with her about this, that it's going to make her worse, and then it's going to make my life worse, and everything's going to be really bad, and everything's going to suck, right? We come up with all sorts of reasons why we shouldn't share how we actually feel. Hey, Wanda, how do you actually feel in this moment? Relieved. Relieved. I know that my husband feels things. I know that he has care and concern for me, that he actually loves me, because what I see on my end is I see a bunch of anger and frustration. I see a lot of confusion, and I'm not sure what to do with it. I don't know if that's anger and confusion at me. I don't know if that's anger and confusion at the situation we find ourselves in. It gets involved in all of our fights and situations, and so I don't know what's what. But now to know that there's this part in my husband which says that he loves me, cares about me, is concerned about me, wants things for my betterment, and he says that he's scared and afraid and doesn't know how to do it, well, I don't care if he knows how to do it or not. In fact, I know he can't do it. I don't feel down or sad about it. I feel relieved because now we can both say before God that we don't know what we're doing and we can get help. Hey, Bob, how's that make you feel? Well, I feel pretty relieved. Wish I would have said that sooner. Right? And so, you know, when we put a lot of these things together, when we actually try to see what emotions are going on, when this stuff comes out, when these beliefs, when these thoughts, when these feelings come to the surface that we're down there, that's when we can actually start applying God's truth in a very powerful way. Whereas before, we were applying it to the things that were further up, which has benefit and value, don't get me wrong. But when we actually get to these things that are below the surface, it has the ability to change things like none other. I think the illustration that I give a lot of people is when you go weed whacking, right? What do? You just go and cut off individual leaves? No, what you want to do is you want to get in as close as you can. If it's like a really out of control, wild bush weed, right? What you want to do is you want to try to cut as much as you can to get as close to the center so that eventually you can cut at the root. But you don't want to stop there. What you really want to do is you want to get under the ground and pry bar up the root so that it doesn't grow back. Right? So much of the Christian service that we do oftentimes focuses around getting rid of leaves, getting rid of branches, sometimes getting rid of almost the whole trunk. But the problem is the roots there are remaining, and then things grow back in their place. It's the way that sin works. But the more that we can uproot these things that we really believe, we really think, we really feel, the more that we can expose that to the light, the more that can be brought to truth, and the more that we can experience freedom, the very thing that Jesus said he came to give us. Final way to do this, I don't know, is to learn how to pray like the psalmists. Right? Maybe if I ask you guys the question, in your prayer life, when's the last time you sounded like David did? Right? You had an all-out battle session. God, I feel this way. I'm angry. I'm frustrated at you. Right? God, show me more of what I believe, but I don't really know. And you were really just honest with him. Right? You see the psalmist, they didn't have any problem. Jonah didn't have any problem. You find various people all throughout the scriptures didn't find any reason to hold back from telling God how they felt. Now, God was very frank with them and told them how he felt too. But that's how change and progress happened. Right? Our prayer lives should look like the Psalms. We should be able to confront God. God can take it. He's powerful. In fact, it's actually better to be angry in dialogue with God than it is to say nothing at all. Way more is going to come from that than from trying to be polite and reserved. I don't think that's what God wants. So, Let me visually show this to you for a second, because I know a lot of you are like visual learners. This is a concept that I think Bev showed me. It's called the infinity cycle. So what you have is you'll have basically some things that are going on above the surface that we're aware of, and some things below the surface that we're not aware of. So this is the exposed stuff. This is the unexposed stuff. On this side, we have Bob. On this side, we have Wanda. So to begin with, what do we have? Well, we have Bob coming in very stoic, maybe mad. And Wanda, who's, I would describe, maybe as panicked, right? Well, we start asking a little bit of questions about what's going on. Bob, are you actually stoic? Do you actually not have emotions? What's going on here? How are you acting to what Wanda's doing? But if that stuff, if we don't actually try to figure out what's going on below the surface, what happens is a lot of times we're just reacting back and forth to what's actually present, right? He's more stoic, she gets more panicked. The more panicked she gets, the more he wants to control her, the more out of control that gets. And so we have this really bad dynamic that goes on between them, right? So much so that when they came in, they were like, we are hopeless. Things are screwed. We are going to get a divorce, right? Those are the words coming out of their mouth walking into the session that day, right? Just imagine the difference between the top of the session and the end of the session. It's night and day. But if we just go back and forth on this stuff, then we never actually see progress. So what do? Bob, how do you feel about this stuff? Well, we find out that he feels frustrated. Well, now that we know that he's frustrated, right? Well, now it's exposed. Right, okay, hey Bob, can you tell us a little bit more about this frustration? It's like, can you tell us what's going on there? What does it feel like to be angry? What does it feel like, I see that you're clenching your fists. Are there any other things that are going on? Well, if I'm really honest, I realize that I'm feeling confused. I'm feeling exhausted. Okay, well, once again, boop, it's exposed. We can bring it to the light, we can address it. And if that's the end of it, then great, we can apply scripture there. But it wasn't, right? Because down below the surface, once again, is this sadness, is this ineptitude. I don't know what I'm doing. I love my wife, but I just feel totally inept to help her out, right? Now that it comes up to the surface, we kind of go to the other side, and Wanda actually feels relieved. Why? Well, if we're being honest, we see that what Wanda wanted all along is to be understood. She wanted to understand that the stuff that her husband was going through wasn't necessarily a direct attack on her. Right? And so, we start to see how she reacts to what's being exposed, which is cool. So, what are the implications of this? For sake of time, we'll move on. I want to make sure you guys have lots of time to ask questions if you have them. What are the implications of this? So for interpersonal relationships, right, between us and other humans, what this means is that we can have better conflict, right? We don't have to go back and forth on the things that don't really matter. We can actually talk about the things that sit below the surface. We have an ability to start maybe accessing that stuff so that we can bring that stuff to light so that we can help other people, right? And this isn't just in marriages, right? I know the example that we had today was about marriage, but it's in friendships, man. There's so many times that I've seen friends who feel really tense around each other. They believe that they're not for each other. You don't really have my best interests in mind. Disciplers and disciples, right? You just want to use me because this will get you further ahead in your agenda, right? You don't actually care about me. Right, but if we can actually talk about this real stuff, man, if we can actually dialogue back to people about how we feel, what it does is it actually enriches our relationships. Better communication, right? That's what we're talking about. We get better communication, which means quicker communication, which means that we have, once again, an easier way to breathe God's truth into the midst of the situation. And like I said, this includes our relationship with God. When we really begin to be able to express this stuff, man, God just has such a simpler time at showing us where the error of our ways is. And he doesn't do it in this way that's like really annoying or frustrating most of the time. I found most of the time when I'm yelling at God, when I'm frustrated at God, he comes in with this just very, very simple language. It calms me down very quickly. He's like, do you really think that I'm at fault here? No. Oh. So why do I feel this way then? Okay, right? And so it allows, right, God to come into the situation. It allows him to start showing us, okay, what are the errors in your ways? But if I'm not bringing this stuff to the table, both in relationship with God and people, I guess maybe the way I describe it to most of those who come into my office is it's like being a detective, maybe like Sherlock Holmes, but what you do is you just cut off totally one of your senses. Right? God has given us emotions to help us understand what's going on and to be enjoyed, right? In their perfect sense, we won't have to labor to figure all this out. But while we're here, while we're still in this life, God has given us the ability to use these things in a way to actually enhance and enrich our relationships. So like I said, look to the Psalms. You want an example? Start going to read the Psalms. You'll find David talking about wanting to bash enemies. Babies, that's pretty crazy. But, you know, he's mad. He's frustrated, right? You'll see other places where, man, I'm so sorrowful. There's just so many examples of people being willing to be frustrated or sad or confused or anxious or even excited and joyful before the Lord. It's good. So let's stop there. Yeah, God, we just pray that you help build in us an emotional maturity, one that is spiritually in tune with you, that, that like Jesus, that we could learn at various times that we do need to ignore the emotions call, but on the flip side, God, that other times that we need to actually express that and get that out. And we know that balance is not something we are going to get from ourselves. We know that that's going to be spiritually given, and so we just humbly come and ask. We recognize that it's going to be your power that does it. And so we praise you and thank you that you want to answer prayers like this, that you care about us, that you feel about us, and that we have the opportunity to become more like you in this way. Amen.